All right, hour number two of our radio program. That's right. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast nationally on the Infinity Sports Network. A double congratulations to Kevin Hovde. Not only are the Florida Gators going to the Final Four, they'll play Saturday night up against Auburn. He's also the new men's head basketball coach right here in the city at Columbia, and he's kind enough to join us right now. Coach, really appreciate you jumping on board with us. I'm sure it's a busy time for you. Thanks for doing this.
No, of course. Thank you so much for having me, Zach.
So watching your Florida team this year, and we'll talk Columbia in just a bit, especially in the tournament, and we know how hot you guys were going into the NCAA tournament. There was a great moment of resiliency up against UConn, and then we saw an extra moment of resiliency with the Final Four spot on the line against Texas Tech when you guys were down 9 points with a little over 3 minutes to go. Just how about the toughness that that team displayed when their backs are up against the wall? They found a way to get the job done.
Yeah, I think it really shows the character of our team. And obviously, we've won a lot of games together this year. So, you know, even though being down nine, you know, late in the game, I think our confidence really never wavered. You know, even in the under four media timeout, just looking around at the guys and the coaches. And I think we all felt like we were going to find a way. And obviously had to make some big shots. A couple guys stepped up, and you know, next thing you know, the game's tied, and then we take the lead, and all of a sudden we're shooting free throws, try to ice the game. So just absolutely amazing finish to the game.
With how long you've been doing this, you've had thrilling moments along the way, but these stakes are the highest that they've been. And sometimes it takes a while to process a crazy victory, a moment of euphoria like that. Did you realize what you guys did in the moment, or did it take a little bit for it to sink in?
I think it's still sinking in, honestly. It was really, really special, and obviously high stakes. And it just happened so quickly because our game in the Elite Eight was Saturday night. And, you know, only 8 days before was our first round game against Norfolk State. So just to be in the Final Four, you know, obviously just an amazing thing. You know, most coaches dream of being able to go coach in a Final Four. And honestly, I'm just still pinching myself that we're going to get to go out there and play on Saturday and, you know, hopefully win two more games this weekend.
Kevin Hovde here with us, assistant at Florida, is the new men's head basketball coach at Columbia. It also feels fake because when I watch Walter Clayton Jr., he just doesn't seem real. He seems like he's a video game type of player. Just what is it like? I know he came over for Iona, has been in the program the last few years. What has it been like to just coach him?
It's been unbelievable. Obviously, one of, if not the best player in the country. His obviously shot making and talent is on full display. But the thing that's amazing about Walt is his confidence. He's truly he's the most confident player I've ever coached, and you know that's evident with some of the shots he takes and makes. But it's real. It's real confidence being around him every day, and you know, not many guys have that where they truly believe they're the best player on the court. And it's just such a luxury for us to have, obviously, because he can take over a game late, but, you know, also throughout the course of a game, you know, he's such a great player that when things aren't going well, or maybe you don't have a great possession, and he can bail you out by, you know, going to get a basket or make a play.
You know this as a coach. There's always a moment when a play is happening where you're like, no, 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 no. And then it goes in and you're like, yes. That moment late where he stops right in front of the rim and then dribbles out and shoots a three and it goes in. Was that the definition of a moment like that?
It was. But, you know, I've seen him do it before in games and obviously every day in practice. So, you know, I do not take it for granted by any means, but we are used to seeing the amazing shot making. But for him to have the poise and confidence to do it on that stage is just unbelievable. And again, it's just a testament to who he is and how hard he works.
I know that you're so focused on the in-game details, but do you sometimes just get lost because when you watch him? Because I've said this about him. I think Cooper Flagg's the best player in the country, but he's the most entertaining player to watch in college basketball. Does your jaw even drop sometimes when you watch him?
Yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, he's so fun to watch. Obviously, you know, the shot making is amazing, but his fluidity, his change of pace, how easy he can make things look is really fun to watch. And yeah, I mean, obviously sitting there getting a front row seat to it is pretty special.
How do you think his game kind of translates to the next level? Because we know how reliant the NBA game is on the 3-point shot. I know that this is big praise, but when I watch him, it kind of feels a little bit like Steph Curry at Davidson, just on a bigger stage at a bigger program like Florida.
I agree. I agree. I'll be really interested. Again, I've talked to him about that. Like, hey, why can't you try to be Stephen Curry? Like how he was in college. And, I think Steph might average like 28 or something. He was ridiculous. But they are, it is similar. Just the shot making, the ability to concentrate, how deep he can make shots from. So I just think there has to be a great role for him in the NBA is how I feel. And I know he's going to work as hard as he can. He's a great kid. He's an awesome locker room guy. And all those things are great advantages as well as he tries to make that jump to the NBA.
Now that's the highest of standards, the greatest 3-point shooter ever. When you say to a kid like that, "Hey, why can't you be Steph Curry?" How does he kind of process that, and what was his response to you?
Well, I mean, I think in his heart of hearts, he's just such a believer. And again, that's what makes him special. And it is unique that we're able to have those conversations. But again, I think it speaks to his confidence, how much we believe in him, how much I believe in him, and then the belief that he has in himself. I have no doubt that, he's obviously has the job to do to finish this thing at Florida the right way. And that's what he's zeroed in on. But I have no doubt that he's going to, have a very successful career in the NBA.
Kevin Hovde here with us. College basketball changes so much. Now we're in this transfer portal era. I know not everyone has transferred in this season, but four out of your five starters have transferred into the program. How did you guys develop that synergy and that trust? Because I always say the transfer portal is like speed dating. You may think when you match, you know what you're getting into, but until you get to know the person, you don't know if it's going to work or not.
Yeah, so I think it's a couple of things. Number one, for us, we're really data driven in kind of everything that we do. So when we're evaluating a transfer, the first thing we're going to dive into is his advanced statistics. And that's something that we feel like gives you an advantage when you are recruiting a transfer because you are going to have some data from, Division One, whether it's the same level or maybe a lower level. So that's the first thing that we look at. Do the numbers align? Are they good enough numbers wise? And then the second piece is the eye test. And sometimes you can have a guy that has really has great statistics analytically, but maybe his game won't necessarily translate to the SEC because maybe he's a little slow or for whatever reason, could be taking advantage of smaller guys at a lower level or however that may be. So when those two boxes are checked, and then the third and most important part becomes the personality piece, and that's where you have to get to know them quickly in recruiting. And we talk about it all the time. This formula has worked every stop we've been at. We brought it to Florida, is getting guys here that have great attitudes, great work ethics, and really want to be Florida Gators. And those three things are non-negotiables for us. So, when we're recruiting transfers, even though it's a quicker recruitment process, we're really trying to dig in and make sure that the guys that we bring into the program fit the way we are at Florida.
You mentioned playing in the SEC. It's fitting that we have two SEC schools remaining, Auburn and Florida. We had Bruce Pearl on the show yesterday. Kevin Hovde is here with us, assistant on the Florida basketball team, and obviously is off to Columbia whenever this run does end. Maybe two more games potentially with the one shining moment on Monday night. But whenever nationally we talk about the SEC, it's usually, all right, they're the preeminent football conference. And then the Big Ten and them have kind of been even the last few years. Big Ten maybe jumping them a little bit with the two last national championships. But in basketball, 14 teams in the tournament. You have two teams in the Final Four. What has it been like to be a part of just this dominance in the SEC?
It's been awesome. It's been awesome. And, obviously the best or one of the best conference slates ever. And, I think you can look at it one of two ways. I think there are some people who are like, oh, this is so hard night in, night out. But I think you have to look at it as just an incredible opportunity every night and just be thankful that you get to compete in this incredible league where every night there's anybody can beat you. There wasn't one team on our schedule in conference play that couldn't come in and beat you. So, the preparation and how much goes into it is so important. You have to be even more prepared. And again, it was awesome to go through it. And I think it obviously made us into the team that we are. And hopefully we can go this weekend and win two more games.
I'm a big fan of Elijah Martin. I remember him at FAU. I love Dusty May's teams, and he's done an incredible job now at Michigan in his first year, winning the Big Ten and getting to a Sweet 16. But his experience that he's brought to your program, being able to go on one of these long runs in March, just could you place a value on having that with you?
No, I mean he's been amazing and really all season. Really when he stepped foot on campus in the summer last June, and right away he just raised the bar in a lot of areas of our program. And we felt like we had a good season last year. Kind of broke through and made the NCAA tournament, did some good things, but really adding Elijah and just his championship pedigree was so important for us because just all the details, little things, and kind of the day in, day out work that it takes to be a championship level program. He had a great understanding of that, and he's also willing to hold everyone accountable, which is obviously very important as well.
If memory serves me right, the tourney last year, you guys had that thriller up against Colorado. For the guys that stayed, just what did that kind of do to get that little taste to propel you guys not only going on this run, but being consistently one of the best teams in the country this year?
Yeah, I think the big lesson for that was that we really had to improve on the defensive side of the ball. So that was a good thing going into the offseason. I think we gave up 100 over 100 points in regulation in that game. So it just left a bad taste in our mouth. And when we got the group back together and started summer workouts with the new team, I think it was easy for us as a coaching staff and as a program to kind of have a plan and emphasize how we were going to get better defensively. And that's really what we did. We worked on it every day. We put a ton of time into it and kind of established a grittier mentality on that side of the ball. And it showed up. I think we're top 10 in adjusted defensive efficiency this year. And that's the reason that we've really been able to make that jump, because we were pretty confident that with our personnel and our firepower that we'd be able to score the ball well enough. But breaking through defensively was really the key for why this team is great.
I know Thomas Howe, had a really good season for you guys, but in this tournament, you have a game like what he had in the Elite Eight. He gets more recognition than he's ever received. To see him have that moment once again with your backs up against the wall, with him needing to deliver, just what did that kind of mean to you?
It was everything. I mean, he's obviously a great player, extremely versatile. The thing that makes him a great player is his competitiveness. He's one of the most competitive players I've ever coached, and his work ethic is amazing. He's in the gym all the time, working on his game, unafraid to fail, has real belief in himself because of the work that he puts in. So, to see him do it on that stage, it was amazing. And he's had great games for us this year. He's had 20-point games. He's obviously a huge part of our success, but for him to play that well and then finish the game with the back-to-back threes that kind of kept us in it was special for sure.
Coach Golden, for a long time, you guys were assistants back in the day. I guess you could say now at Columbia, which it's wild that you're now going to be their head coach. But what was that like, those early years with Coach Golden as assistants?
It was great. It was great. Yeah, we met each other back in 2012. He came to Columbia, so that was like 13 years ago, and worked together at Columbia and then San Francisco, and got to be a part of when he first became a head coach. I stayed with him, was on his staff, so I got to see him make that transition, and then obviously coming down here to Florida with him, and it's just been unbelievable. He's really the closest thing I have to a brother, and we've been working together. I think we have a great working relationship. He trusts me, which has been amazing for me, for my own personal development, my career development. So, just so thankful for that relationship. And obviously we'll always remain, very close no matter what.
And now, when you go on a run like this at a program like Florida with their background, he becomes a household name in the coaching community. Just for you, how do you describe the type of coach he is with how many different stops you've been there with him?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's just supremely confident, and he's always been that way. We always say he's like the perfect amount of being a little the perfect amount of being irrational. But that's what you need in order to really break through and do this at such a high level. He's special that way, and he instills belief in the program, in his players. You can tell he's a quote unquote players coach as far as just the way he interacts with them on the court and the emotion that he shows. And I think that's a big reason that we were able to come back when we were down nine with our backs against the wall late in that game, is probably the confidence that he's instilled in them all year. I think there wasn't a moment where he thought we were gonna lose that game, and that translates to the guys. So I think that's he's very talented and has so many strengths, but that belief and confidence that he can instill in his players is really special and unique. I haven't seen many that can do that.
It's got to be a whirlwind for you because, right, you have a new job upcoming at Columbia, right? Big job for you in the Ivy League, and now you're in the Final Four. Just how do you kind of manage both of these things right now?
Yeah, no, it's definitely a whirlwind, but obviously great, all good things. And it's been great, honestly. And finishing this thing out with Florida, obviously with this team, like I'm so thankful that I get to do that and go try to win a national championship this weekend. And also getting started up at Columbia. I was actually able to sneak up there for a day last week, but we had an off day and I was able to fly up to New York to meet the team in person and do some individual meetings, which was awesome. Got a great group of guys in there that really want to be good. And so, that makes me feel great about it. And just looking forward to, trying to finish this thing out the right way at Florida and then right away, getting up to New York and getting going.
No, we got to get you to the good restaurants in New York City.
Sure.
I'm sure you miss some of that New York food, right?
Of course. No, no question. No question. I was there for 5 years, so I got a little taste of it, but excited about that part for sure.
What is a Kevin Hovde basketball program going to look like at Columbia?
Yeah, I think number one, really consistent. That's something I talked to the guys about, but I think that's the most important thing for me is having great consistency across all parts of the program. So, meaning what we work on and how we play, how we communicate with our guys. Just every part of the program. I think that's a really important thing for, any program being good. I think as far as style of play, it'll hopefully be similar to Florida. We're going to play up tempo, fast pace. We'll have a good continuity where all five guys get to touch the ball and make decisions. It's not just dependent on one or two guys. And then defensively, again, similar. We're going to play as a team. We're going to help each other out. I think one thing that I'm really excited about is, the kind of guys that you can attract to Columbia are obviously intelligent guys that are high achievers, and we need to use that to our advantage in how we coach and how we play.
For you, going up against Auburn on Saturday, I know you guys played them earlier in February, and you guys got a victory up against them. They're a tremendous basketball team. There's a reason why they're the number one overall seed in the tournament. I can't wait for this one. Just what stands out to you about Coach Pearl's program?
Oh, I mean, he's everything. I mean, they're a great program. Obviously, we're really familiar because of Todd's relationship and his
Sure.
experience there. But yeah, I mean,
Coached him in the Maccabi games, Bruce Pearl, back
I
in
know.
09. That's wild.
It's incredible. It's incredible. So, no, but obviously, great team, super well coached with great players. It'll be a, tremendous challenge. And just like we did up there, like we played well up there, but we need to do a great job taking care of the ball. We can't give them any swing plays in a game like that, in a game this big. So it gets down to defending, rebounding, and taking care of the ball, and digging in on those three things, and trusting that your guys are going to go out there and make plays. So I think we're obviously working on it as hard as we can right now, and we'll do everything we can to make sure the guys are prepared and ready to go.
Take me through what you think is going to be going through your mind when you walk out in San Antonio Saturday evening as that ball's about to get thrown up in the air.
Yeah, no, I'm sure it'll be surreal, just the sheer size and magnitude of the arena. Playing in a game with that many people there is incredible. But when it gets down to it, I think, and honestly, the experience in the SEC and how high level program Florida is, it does, even though I've never coached in a Final Four, I think it does help because there's been so many huge games that we've gone into, playing Tennessee at home is a huge game in Gainesville, so and all these games, the SEC championship. So we've been in really big games, and I think the key for that is you kind of have to be able to block that out and compartmentalize it and really focus on what's going on in the game. And we'll be zeroed in on making sure that we do that, and I'm confident that we'll be able to do that, especially as the game settles in.
Well, Coach, once again, double congratulations. Final Four, the job at Columbia. We'll have to come out there and catch a game next year, but really appreciate the time and good luck this weekend. Enjoy it.
Thanks so much, Zach. Really appreciate it.
I have to admit something, and it's been on my mind for the last hour and 25 minutes, because I believe, right, our radio show community, we shouldn't lie to one another. And I've been a huge advocate leading the charge. When you eat wings, you smother them. Smother them and blue cheese. Last night, I was put in a compromising position, though. I went to a phenomenal restaurant in Brooklyn called Laser Wolf. Really cool concept. They give you like unlimited appetizers on a platter. So it's like a bunch of different dips that you have. They give you like a unlimited pita bread as well. And they have different kind of, you know, cups that they put on this platter of just totally different things. So wonderful. And then we got a steak. We got some french fries. And they have really good wings there. Never been to this restaurant before. So I sit down, look at the menu, and I look at the wings. And it says the wings come with tahina ranch. That's what I see it as. And I'm like, come again? Ranch? I go, ugh. And you don't have blue cheese? They go, no. So the wings come. I pick up the wing. Did not dip it in the ranch. Refused to. Eat the wing. Wing is sensational. Really damn good. And then I said, I got to try the ranch. Because it's a special ranch. And I tried it. Not as good as blue cheese. Let's be clear. But since it was a special ranch, it was adequate. It was good. Now, I didn't dip the other wings that I had in the ranch again. Some of the french fries, maybe a little pita as well. But still, I was in a tough spot last night because of how outspoken I've been, being the voice for the voiceless when it comes to the chicken wing community about blue cheese over ranch. But I was at a place last night where I was told the wings are to die for, and they served the wings with a certain style ranch. Not like the normal ranch. It was a different type of ranch. It was very spicy ranch, too. But this was on my mind for an hour and 25 minutes, and I just didn't know how to come clean with you guys about this.
I'm glad you did.
Because you're a ranch guy, right?
I am, yes.
And Samter, I forget your stance on this. Ranch or blue cheese?
I'm definitely a ranch guy. However, I'm not anti-blue cheese. I just prefer ranch. So, like, for you, I guess you are anti-ranch.
Oh, I hate ranch.
Yeah, see, that's the problem, right? There's one thing about being ranch over blue cheese over ranch, but you're anti-ranch. You're not even like...
I just don't think ranch is good.
It's just, I don't get it, man.
It's like, it's a simple concept. My taste buds don't like it.
It came straight down from heaven, ranch.
No, it didn't.
I mean, it was touched by an angel.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Oh, those spices in the ranch, oh, and the buttermilk, the creaminess, oh, there's nothing better. And a spicy ranch, a chipotle ranch maybe, oh, give it to me. But again, I think a lot
Calm
of people...
Calm down there. I think you're getting moist.
I'm getting something. I think Santa's a lot of people prefer ranch or blue cheese, but... Not most people are anti one or the other. I'm not anti blue cheese. I'm just pro ranch.
I actually think it's a societal issue and it's a geographic issue. And Jonathan Taylor opened my eyes to that. He's a blue cheese guy. Northeast guy, though. You get down south, like we're going to Texas, right? I think Texas is more of a ranch community. So, Stu, you need to be careful here.
Uh-oh.
When I'm in Texas with you starting tomorrow... If they offer me ranch, do not let me try it. I have reached my ranch limit, my ranch
quota
for the year, and there will be no more ranch going into
Did
my
you
body.
Enjoy the wings last night with the special ranch on it?
I thought they were fine. I thought they were better without the ranch.
Try it when you're there. Just try it.
No, I'm not. Regular ranch sucks. It blows.
When was the last time you had regular ranch?
I don't know. Like, what if I sit there and I When I get wings, I like blue cheese.
No, what I'm saying is, when was the last time you've had regular ranch?
I would say a year ago. I was at a place, and I asked for blue cheese, and they brought out ranch by mistake, and I took my wing, my drumstick, I dunked it into the ranch, and I put it into my mouth, and I said, nope, that's not good. That's not blue cheese.
Okay. All I'm saying is taste buds change. Maybe you don't hate ranch now as much as you used to hate ranch.
I just think it was a really damn good restaurant, and they could have put anything on a plate, and it would have been good. Yeah,
I'm just trying to open your eyes to the deliciousness of ranch.
That's just an oxymoron. It's not a delicious thing. It's just not. Anyway, Buffalo, known for what? Wings and blue cheese. Brandon Bean, the general manager of the Buffalo Bills. Look at that transition. That's why I'm good at my job, folks. I just earned some wings and some blue cheese. Bar Bill, hit me up. Let's get a sponsorship going. Brandon Bean, though, on the lack of an extension right now for James Cook and why these talks are really going nowhere.
We moved on to the guys that, you know, we were more on the same page with. And, you know, at this point, Sal, we're on to the draft. I don't see us doing any deals anytime soon. We're going to focus on the draft and getting our cap in order. But again, just because we don't have James signed today doesn't mean next year we still can't get him done before he gets to free agency.
And they could also go the franchise tag route. Like, look how ugly it got. Look how muddy it got with Saquon Barkley. James Cook is a very good player. A big reason why I thought the Buffalo Bills last year were going to be better than what people thought is my belief in James Cook. James Cook wants like $15 million a year. I don't think he's getting that right now. Don't get me wrong. James Cook is a very good running back. You know, 2 years ago, 1,100 yards. Last year, got 1,000 yards. You know, he is a very good running back. Had two receiving touchdowns as well last year. 16 rushing touchdowns this year. So 18 total touchdowns for the Buffalo Bills. I think James Cook is a very good player. But with that being said, you look at the Bills. The Bills' approach right now is kind of this. We know we got Josh Allen, right? So as long as we have Josh Allen, we have the second best quarterback in football, a guy that puts up prodigious stats. We just took away Stephon Diggs, and did he miss a beat? If anything, the Bills actually were better this year than what they were in Stephon Diggs' final season with the Buffalo Bills. Now, they locked up Khalil Shakir. They're going to need Keon Coleman to break out and then take that next step. Ray Davis, when given his opportunities, was good last year for the Buffalo Bills. They brought in Joshua Palmer. You need Dalton Kincaid to explode onto the scene this year because he's been underwhelming. But I think James Cook, from where they were, the second half of the season 2 years ago when they went to Joe Brady, then what Joe Brady asked of him to do, James Cook is worthy of giving an extension. But how ugly is Buffalo going to let this thing play on out? Because if this continues to a spot where James Cook's like, bleep this, it's like, what leverage do you actually have? I don't think you have that much leverage, because if Brandon Bean wants to get this thing ugly, if he wants to get it like a wing going into ranch, which is just an ugly, despicable thing to do, then they could franchise tag him. And I believe that this is going to play on out, and James Cook has not been afraid to speak his mind. James Cook has been very transparent about this. I don't think he's in a position where it behooves him to miss games, but you never know, right? Like, I wouldn't put it past him. So this is something to monitor, that they're not even having conversations. The question is, can you get to a middle ground? Because Buffalo may look at him as expendable because it's the nature of the running back position, even though, right, we just saw what Saquon Barkley and Derrick Henry did this past year. So this is something to watch, because right now, outside of Josh Allen, and we look at wide receivers, tight ends, and running backs, you know, forget offensive linemen just for a second. But if you look, you take Josh Allen off the table and you just say, out of the running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends, who's the best option? Who's the best weapon for Buffalo? It's James Cook. And you already got rid of Stephon Diggs. I think that this could get through this season fine, but you're going to inevitably have to pay James Cook. And how much are you willing to pay? And remember, Brandon Bean, who's his disciple? Joe Shane. Joe Shane has that very ugly negotiations with Saquon Barkley that did not age well, even though I thought Joe Shane was doing the right thing at the time, did not age well for Joe Shane. So I wonder what the philosophy is going to be. But Brandon Bean just told you, hey, we moved on. It doesn't mean that we can't revisit it and can't get something done. But right now, I would not expect that to be like first and goal, ball in the three. It seems like it's first and 10, and you got the ball at your own 25-yard line right now when it comes to James Cook getting a new contract. All righty, we'll take a break. We'll do a little overreaction, proper reaction on the other side. Update time first. Here's Zach.
Another NFL week is complete, which means it's another week to freak out about your favorite team. Which takes are truly crazy.
But sometimes a game can be so bad, it's almost good. You know what I'm saying? No.
And which are so crazy, they might be right.
He's 6'5", he's 245 pounds. He's probably a Popeye's biscuit away from being a tight end.
Zach lets you know in this week's edition of Overreaction or Proper Reaction.
All righty, Overreaction, Proper Reaction time. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. And this portion of the show is brought to you by Ethos Life, the easy way to get life insurance in 10 minutes, up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam. Just a few health questions. Get your free quote at checkethos.com. Not available in all states. Stu, what do we got cooking?
All right, so what the Browns do at quarterback is, of course, one of the biggest questions remaining this offseason. The most likely scenarios are drafting a quarterback at number two or trading for Kirk Cousins. However, as we mentioned earlier in the show, according to Tony Grossi of ESPN Cleveland, there might be a third option.
They really like Kenny Pickett and is confident that he could be the starting quarterback on day one. Three times today, Kevin Stefanski came back to saying, I'm really excited about Kenny. Kenny's our guy. Okay, so if you accept that, okay, it probably means they're passing on a quarterback at number two. Because if you picked a quarterback at two, you wouldn't be building up Kenny Pickett at all. So my other take off of this is that I really think they like Travis Hunter as their pick at two if okay. They stay there.
So overreaction or proper reaction, it is too soon to give up on former first-round pick Kenny Pickett as an NFL starter.
I think that's an overreaction. I'm not going to sit here and anticipate that Kenny Pickett's going to be a long-term starting quarterback in this league. Stories like Sam Darnold and Geno Smith, even though we've seen two of those stories recently, they're anomalies. So I look at a Kenny Pickett. He was picked, 19th or 20th overall in the draft, I think 19th. He wasn't even viewed to be that great coming out of college. Now, he had a wonderful season his last year at Pitt, won ACC Player of the Year. But even though, right, Kenny Pickett's a nice guy and all that stuff, and he had a good career in college, with how his career has gone so far, should I be holding my breath that Kenny Pickett's going to be the stud? No, he's going to be a backup. Until he's given an opportunity, rather it's because they're waiting to go to somebody else or injury, where he'll get another opportunity to play. And it's how much can you move the needle and how much can you change the perception about you when you get those opportunities. But I'm not going to go into the season actually thinking that the Browns are going to have Kenny Pickett as their starting quarterback.
As we mentioned, the future of Kirk Cousins in Atlanta is very much up in the air. While the team exercised his $10 million contract bonus, he could still get traded, with the most likely destination, of course, being Cleveland. Now, yesterday, Raheem Morris admitted that a trade isn't out of the question, saying, quote, if it's something that's good for both of us, we certainly would like to see that happen, end of quote. Overreaction or proper reaction, it would be better for Atlanta to trade Cousins than keep him as a backup.
What are you going to get for him? That's the question. I don't think you're getting some great pick. I don't. Now, the money here is a big factor. So you try to save as much money as possible by getting rid of him, but you already owe him so much money guaranteed. I would, at this rate, I keep him. I would. I don't think they're going to keep him. I do believe eventually he'll probably go to Cleveland, especially if they're not going to draft Shedeur Sanders and then probably take Travis Hunter. Then Cleveland would make sense with Stefanski. But I would actually keep him for this reason and this reason only. Michael Penix Jr. should be a really good quarterback. I like Michael Penix Jr. I do question him a little bit when on the intermediate throws that he makes, and you saw that be a problem a little bit up against Michigan as well. Will Johnson with that interception. But before Michael Penix Jr. got to Washington, he had a bevy of injuries. So you're already paying the quarterback a pretty penny in Kirk Cousins. I wouldn't mind having him on your roster for another season in case of Michael Penix Jr. suffers an injury, which maybe he will, maybe he won't, hopefully he doesn't. but he is an injury-prone quarterback. So it would be better for Atlanta to trade Cousins than keep him as a backup. I would actually say overreaction to that is how I'd answer it.
Nick Sirianni entered 2024 on the hot seat, but things have certainly changed after hoisting the Lombardi Trophy. Now, Sirianni is cemented among the best coaches in the league, but is entering the final year of his contract. However, he doesn't seem too concerned that he hasn't received an extension yet from the Eagles.
Yeah, these things will take care of themselves. I'm not too concerned about it. I don't really get into contracts with anybody. I'm not going to get into it on this one, and so it'll happen. It'll take care of itself.
Overreaction or proper reaction, the Eagles should give Sirianni an extension before the season.
Absolutely. Proper reaction. And I was a critic of Nick Sirianni at the end of the 2023 season. Big critic. And early on in 2024, it did not look like it was going his way. Guy just won a Super Bowl. What are we doing here? The Eagles should give Sirianni an extension for this season. Guy's entering the final year of his contract. He just won a Super Bowl. He was just in the hot seat. Now he's entering the final year of his contract. He just won a Super Bowl, right? He won a Super Bowl. Pam, let's go. What's taking so long? Absolutely. Proper reaction. I think he will.
Hard Knocks has expanded its criteria for which teams can be forced to participate. Now, under the previous rules, only the Falcons, Titans, Seahawks, and Panthers were eligible for this upcoming season.
Falcons, Titans, Seahawks, and Panthers. I know this is going to change. I guess I'd be most interested in the Falcons out of that group.
All right. So,
is that the question?
That is the question. Despite the much wider field, overreaction, prop reaction, of the four teams eligible under the old rules, the Titans would be the most interesting.
Overreaction? What are you selling me on? Maybe Cam Ward being there? Outside of that, what else? Callahan? Oh, okay, Will Levis is still there, so maybe they'll have a blob on the side. We already seen that. So, no. Tennessee would not be the most interesting. That is an overreaction. You could actually argue Falcons, Titans, Seahawks, and Panthers. Seahawks would be more interesting with Sam Darnold. Falcons would be more interesting with the Kirk Cousins drama. You got Bijan Robinson. You got Michael Penix Jr. I would even say the Titans could be the least interesting team out of this group. Because, okay, there's some intrigue with Cam Ward, but nothing else. You got the Bryce Young storyline, and can we find out whatever happened to David Tepper? Because he was, like, the most vocal and obnoxious NFL owner, and we haven't heard from him since, so maybe he's learning something. So I would say that Tennessee could be the least interesting option out of those four. All right, next question.
NFL owners voted on rule changes for next season early this morning. Although they did decide to table the tush-push conversation to later this spring.
You hear that?
What is that?
Sean McDermott and Matt LaFleur. Give me a break, losers.
So one rule that did pass was the change to the overtime rules that will now mimic the postseason and give each team at least one possession. Overreaction or proper reaction, you like the new overtime rule?
Sure, because at least there's some consistency. So I'll go proper reaction there. But I'm not sitting here like losing sleep if they didn't pass this. But I would go proper reaction. I'm more in favor of this.
So while the regular season overtime rule did change, one rule that was rejected was the Lions proposal that would eliminate an automatic first down for the 5-yard defensive holding and illegal contact penalties. Overreaction or proper reaction, you're glad that this rule did not pass.
I am proper reaction because I think there's too much of a gray area when you look at pass interference, illegal contact, and then holding, especially holding. So it wouldn't be an automatic first down for defensive holding and illegal contact penalties. I think you got to be disciplined in those moments. So I'm fine that this rule did not pass. I would actually go proper reaction on that.
All right. And last one. Finally, one other big change for next year involves the referees. The league is going to use the Hawkeye technology to measure first downs rather than using the chain gang. The chain gang will remain on the sideline, but only in a backup role. However, this rule change won't change how the ball is spotted, only how distance is measured. Overreaction or proper reaction, you'd rather keep the chain gang in the game rather than using this new system.
So you're telling me I may never get Gene Steratore ever going out there with an index card again and seeing if it's a first down or not? Or you're not going to see some guy trot out and pull out the chains and see if you get a first down. That's a great suspense moment. You're telling me now they're just going to basically have some technology that shows you if it's a first down or not? Is that what you're telling me, Stu?
Basically, yeah. That's it.
It's a sad day. You know, I'm having a moment of silence. Thank you. The music was a little bit inconsiderate right there, but geez. It's like when they're honoring someone and you have someone scream out in the crowd. That's a sad day. The chain gang is now going to be a backup. They're going to be the two deep on the depth chart. But all kidding aside, when you ask me you'd rather keep the chain gang in the game than use the new system, I would actually go overreaction. This has been something, right? The technology with the to show the first downs and everything. I once heard this guy, Alan Amron, who I think he claims that he invented the post-it or the sticky note, whatever you want to call it. He first talked to me about this at a Super Bowl. In the Super Bowl where the lights went out in New Orleans. Think about how long that is. When the lights went out in New Orleans, it was the Ravens and the 49ers. They've been talking about going to this technology. I was in college. I'm now in my 30s. You know, just being 30. I now have gray hair. It's like, it took you this long to do something this simple, that antiquated? So, yes, even though I do enjoy seeing like a fat guy run out with the chains and catch his breath and then say if it's a first down or not, I like that old system. But yes, I am more in favor of the new system than the old school system of this. And it probably saves some time, too. All right, it will break. When we come on back, the 49ers are going all out on Brock Purdy. Is he worth it? And who are some other quarterbacks that will debate if they're worth it or not? And Elijah Roberts, SMU defensive end, getting ready for the draft. He's going to join us 25 minutes from now for a little prospect profile.